Welcome back to Shattering Mystery. Our conversation with Glenn about the resistance to many bacteria, to antibiotics. But before we return to that, Glenn, I was horrified to hear the national plea for a national day of prayer. It is really sad, particularly when they cite the likes of Washington and Lincoln in all of this. You know, the myth of Lincoln is one of the most despicable myths in America. He broke the Constitution at every opportunity, neglected it entirely, put the country in debt, led to the death of 600,000 Americans to restrict the freedom of half of the country. And he was an avowed racist. And yet he is called the great emancipator. And you have Washington. Washington was the second highest ranking Freemason in the country. You know, his God and the Christian God have nothing in common. And prayer and nations have nothing in common. God wants us to walk away from our country. Doesn't want us to pray for our country. And the prayer of anyone who is without the Torah is an abomination to God. I mean, this whole concept of mixing religion and politics is reprehensible.
You mean like a Western Pennsylvania church floating a legal defense fund for a kid who stabbed a bunch of his, you know, fellow students?
Oh, yeah, well, there you've got a mix of religion in the judicial system. But the National Day of Prayer and all of this emphasis on it is reprehensible. I mean, it is the worst example of the integration of religion and politics, which when they're integrated, you go right back to Babylon. You go right back to Egypt. You go right back to Rome. You go back to the most disgusting empires in human history.
Well, Lincoln presided over the worst per capita bloodbath in all of American history. It still remains so per capita.
Oh, of course. Not only did he preside over it, he initiated it. He was the cause of it. And the man didn't do it because he loved African Americans and he wanted to be the great emancipator. In his debates with Douglas, he thought that the appropriate thing to do with African Americans is to recognize that they were so deficient that they had to be isolated into to concentration camps. He wanted them deported and not included. He didn't want more slave states only because that would integrate more blacks in with whites. I mean, he was a despicable racist.
And the whole he was commended by Karl Marx for being able to maintain centralized government.
Yeah, I know. Oh yeah, he everything that he could do in opposition to the U.S. Constitution, in addition to disallowing states to choose freely not to be part of the Union. I mean, Lincoln is the epitome of what Americans don't get in Crimea and in the eastern part of what's errantly called the Ukraine and Little Russia, is that people ought to be able to choose to associate and disassociate. It's like the Americans thought that it was okay and acceptable for Ukrainians to choose to disassociate from Russia 20 years ago, but if they choose to associate with Russia now, that is not acceptable.
Well, and I'm not sure who's running the show over there in Ukraine anymore. It's certainly not that mealy-mouthed, you know, Casper Milquetoast Yatsenyuk, okay? Mm-hmm. And they trot him out in front of the cameras because he can speak, you know, more English better or something.
I think it's the American CIA. In cahoots with the State Department of the United States and the Obama administration. I'm convinced that we are the puppeteer. By the way, so is Putin. Putin has said it on a number of occasions that it's obvious that America is playing the junta in the Ukraine as one would play a puppet.
Putin
has acknowledged that America is the puppeteer.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. The Ukrainians are expelling the Russian military attaché to the embassy over there today.
Yeah. And the Ukrainians have also admitted that they have no means whatsoever to influence what is happening in the eastern part of the country. They finally said, yeah, okay, you know, the big bravado is, boy, we're gonna eliminate all of the terrorists and provocateurs, and you just watch us. We're gonna launch our raids today, and there won't be a single terrorist left in this country when we're done. You just watch us. That was 2 weeks ago, and now they're saying, yeah, well, you know, maybe we have no influence whatsoever. We can't do a thing about this. Why? Because it's a popular uprising.
Are circumventing the checkpoints. They like drive, you know, they showed an example on BBC where they just like drove through a field and did not encounter them. But
right.
I would love to see a Ukrainian military commander, especially like an armored colonel, an armored battalion colonel or something, say, "Follow me, boys. Surround that building with a bunch of tanks and NPCs and just oust them, counter coup them." All it would take is one deputy colonel, because the military is not following, you know.
Yeah, and if someone did that and they decided that they were going to use those weapons and their military against ethnic Russians in the east, then about 15 minutes later, you'd have the Russian Federation in protecting its people. But we've gone far afield of this. We're trying to nail down the disgusting nature of a national day of prayer. But I do want to return back to this story on antibiotics, because it appears to be an extraordinarily serious problem. And of course, Yosha, when he was listing the things that would serve as birth pangs that would become greater in frequency and greater in magnitude prior to his return, a pandemics, which this would certainly allow, is one of the things that he said would occur. So the report focused on seven different bacteria. Remember, I told you that it wasn't just staph. It focused on seven different bacteria responsible for common serious diseases, particularly pneumonia and diarrhea and blood infections. And it suggested that key antibiotics no longer work in more than half of the people being treated in many countries.
Right.
Now, one of them is, I'll probably mispronounce this, but carbapenem is called the last resort drug to treat people with life-threatening infections such as pneumonia and blood stream infections and infections in newborns. WHO is saying that it is now almost ineffective. So it was the last resort, and the places they're using it now say it's not working.
I would have to think that, well, okay, modern antibiotics with which we're familiar are mostly based on the principle of damaging cell walls or inhibiting cell wall growth. Okay, now that's been the principle that the vast majority of our antibiotics, especially antibacterials, have been based on. Now, in this era of gene modification, okay, I would have to think that somewhere along the line, somebody might tell us everything about what they know about, you know, a virus is essentially an RNA torpedo. It goes in, it breaches a cell, marries itself into the genetics, and begins reproducing. Now, in this age of genetic research and genetically modified this and that, you know, I would think that they should be able to fight fire with fire and go in and, you know, have some little gene splicing, you know, counter drugs of their own. I will say then, and they're also,
But here's the problem, Glenn. Here's the problem with that. And this is the problem that's raised in this particular article. They say that on the antibiotic, not the virus side, but on the bacterial infection side, that now people are dying by the millions around the world because of the fact that common infections are no longer treatable with antibiotics, okay? And what they say is the only solution for this is to encourage private industry to develop new antibiotics. But here's the problem with that. The litigation that is being brought against pharmaceutical companies and the animosity that exists against pharmaceutical companies is such that it is no longer economically beneficial for a pharmaceutical company to develop a new drug because the legal consequences of some side effect are so egregious. And so we've created a condition where industry no longer has an incentive to create the remedy because of public policy.
Yeah, yeah, but you're citing that as the trend as an entrepreneur with experience in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, who's familiar with the prevailing milieu. All they have to do is give them the guarantees they have accorded to the vaccine manufacturers and software developers, you know, freeing them from liability and say, go to town, boys.
Yeah, but the reason that will not occur, I mean, that's, I understand that all it would take is a political mandate, even if you, I'm not sure, by the way, that the government can even cause somebody to be immune from prosecution.
Because they, vaccine manufacturers.
Well, they give them that umbrella, but the problem is that the government cannot legally cause somebody to be immune from prosecution. The only thing is that is actually immune from prosecution is the government itself. And so constitutionally, if you were to challenge government-appointed immunity, you would find that it would be extraordinarily easy to pierce. But beyond that, even if they, you'd have to have the will of the of politicians to go off and do something which would be considered beneficial to. And if you were to name industries in the world today that that are attacked by the majority, pharmaceutical companies are going to be in the top three of almost anybody's list. Pharmaceutical companies, oil companies, and companies that make war materials. They're going to be in the and bankers. So those are the top four. So it would take an enormous amount of willpower for a politician to assign their name to a to legislation that would cause immunity from prosecution for pharmaceutical companies. I agree, that's the, that is a possibility, but then you also have to eliminate the testing of the FDA because there's no pharmaceutical company that's going to spend $1 billion. In this particular sense, at this point, the duration of life of a antibiotic is so short-lived. There isn't enough time even to prosper on it. And if you had this kind of a deal from government, government is not going to allow a monopoly on the drug that is developed. So, you know, you're in a lose-lose game. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're talking about the severity of the concern over the fact that the human genome has found ways to counter the ballistic missiles, if you will, that pharmaceutical companies have designed to fight various infections. At this point, it appears to be the genome prevailing against the artificial contrivance. Although, to be fair, most antibiotics, at least initially, were natural byproducts. That's you know, a garlic, for example, happens. Yeah, they grew out of mold initially. But in fact, mold on bread initially was the source of them. And there are antibiotic properties found in substances like garlic. So, we certainly took that to an extreme in modifying them. This report goes on to say, yes, go ahead, Glenn.
I wanted to tell you why this occurrence of these resistant strains is wonderful from the standpoint of the globalist, both physically and politically.
Of course.
Because it's a wet dream for a gradualist, Fabian socialist attempting to achieve the goals of Agenda 21, because it kills people, but not so fast that you can't handle the mass graves. You know, it will increase the rate at which people die, but in a societally manageable manner. And then politically, the legal impasses you were citing provide a justification for top-down fascist corporatistic control of the system so that, supposed cures can be expedited.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. That's what this smacks about. The reason they were comparing it to global warming is that global warming, which happens to be a mostly a farce. There is an aspect of global warming that's actually true. We entered a period of planetary warming in 1875 after we came out of the Little Ice Age, the natural cycle that lasts anywhere from 300 to 600 years. The fact that man has contributed to it and that man can stop it, of course, is a complete and utter farce. And it's also a farce in the last 15 years. We haven't had global warming. But the fact of the matter is that global warming is being used as a ploy for elitist politicians worldwide and economists worldwide and the like to control the life style and pocketbooks of people around the world. You know, they want to tell you what you can and cannot do, what you can and cannot enjoy, what you can and cannot have, and they want to take monies from those who have been productive and give it to those who are not productive to win the hearts and minds and votes of the parasites. That is the nature of global warming. They're going to do exactly the same thing here in this battle. And, of course, here they're going to say it's life and death. You know, you go along with our solution or we vote that you die.
And they're also got a tendency, you just mentioned garlic. Homeopathics, there are some very effective homeopathics. You mentioned yes. Garlic. They've isolated Alice in the Sea now as a very effective antipathogenic. Silver has long been known, and I know you're not a big fan of that. And then, of course,
I'm not. It's not that I'm opposed to colloidal silver. The reason I have fun with colloidal silver is that, first of all, there are such colloidal silver is a very good topical antibiotic. It's been used in to prevent infections, for example, and been burn victims for years. I used it when I had. First degree burns over my shoulder and arms, and I think it's an extraordinarily effective ointment for burns. I just kind of laugh at those who say what you should really do is just swallow a bunch of it. I'm not as big a fan on consuming it orally as I am applying it topically.
After consuming it for a period of over about 3 months, it got rid of a very long-standing, very deep toenail fungus that I had on one toenail. It's completely cleared up. Now, yes, I don't know about Argyria. Just as you would not take an entire bottle of aspirin, you wouldn't, enough colloidal silver to give you Argyria.
And I can see that it might affect a fungal infection, and I understand that toenail fungal infections are not only unsightly, they're difficult to treat topically. Mm-hmm. And I realize that there are some natural alternatives for antibiotics, but I do not think that if you have pneumonia, for example, that you're going to resolve it if you're on the precipice of death by eating a little linguine with roasted garlic.
We have a
severe problem that diseases on the rise and the cure is not. In its report, this is the World Health Organization, they said that resistance to antibiotics, for example, for E. coli, urinary tract infections, had increased from zero in the 1980s to being ineffective in more than half of the cases worldwide today. E. coli. 50% of the cases, it's completely ineffective. Last year, the chief medical officer for England, Professor Davies, said that the rise in drug-resistant infections was comparable to the threat of global warming. Yeah, that's how they want to use it, that's for sure. Dr. Cohen, medical director of the, it's Cohen, actually not Cohen, but Cohen, a medical director for Doctors Without Borders, Medecins Sans Frontières, said that we see horrendous rates of antibiotic resistance wherever we look in our field operations, including children admitted to centers in Niger and people in our struggle and our surgical and trauma units in Syria.
Mm-hmm.
this quote. Ultimately, WHO's report should be a wake-up call to governments and introduce incentives for industry to develop new affordable antibiotics that do not rely on patents and high prices and are adapted to the needs of developing countries. There is the problem. They want them to develop new drugs, which there's no incentive to do today because of two things. One is the billion-dollar cost of getting it through FDA approval, and the short-lived benefit of the drugs and the subsequent liability associated with them. And the only way that you can make that work is to charge outrageous prices for those drugs. Otherwise, you can't profit when you are being sued, and when awards are in the billions of dollars for such suits, and when you have to pay $1 billion in FDA approval trials. And so what they want is no patents, which means no one would have any incentive to develop anything. So no patents, no high prices, and the only way you can do that is it can't be done through industry, and government can't do anything. So it's not achievable. It's a battle that we have lost because of the requirements and the situation.
If you're going to insist on allopathic medication, which is fine, and that is an issue, but in these areas you're citing, these third world areas, these malnourished people who don't have good diets with all the minerals they need to provide the building blocks for the immune systems that Yahweh created. Just immune system, they could get vegetables, vitamin and mineral supplements, probiotics for their guts, and a lot of immune system function has to do with gut function. So they could just hack it from just the health.
I understand we could boost the immune system. That's not what they're saying here, by the way. They want to treat it with antibiotics.
I
understand what you're saying. And of course, the problem with that is that we have created an international situation, a political and economic situation internationally that isn't conducive to individual accountability or an individual's contribution to their own health. We have created a world now that is dependence-based. And
their own leaders will starve them. You're highly selective.
Right. Of course.
Brain rot at the dock.
Well, you look at every Islamic country. They use food as a weapon. And in an Islamic country, if you try to nourish people, if you try to provide health care, the imams will target you and kill you. So it's, that's more easily said than done. The conditions that man has imposed on humanity right now are not conducive to that result. In fact, they're conducive to the alternative, which is the problem. Look at what happened to America when we tried to intervene and help the United Nations distribute food in Somalia. How'd that work out for us?
Right. You end up, taking care of building your own terrorists.
Yeah, and look at the Europe's and America's efforts to supply some food along with weapons in Syria. What little food that we do provide is always used as a weapon of war. People are said you either side with the terrorists and provide hosting for them and give your sons to fight with them, or you starve.
Right. Which some Americans, and I might reasonably say, you often cite the fact where you say that, Yahweh is not involving himself in the affairs of
humankind.
Unredeemed man or not mankind outside of covenant with him. But the American, by the same token, people with a nation state might well say, hey, these foreign entanglements aren't really ours to solve. They aren't really our problem. We don't want to be heartless, but anytime someone says maybe once in a while we should mind our own business, they're accused of being isolationist. Because if you're not going along with the imperialist agenda, you're accused of being an isolationist.
I understand that we have created a situation that is not solvable. That's one of the reasons why I began this program, by saying that we recognize that human institutions, political, economic, military, and religious institutions have created a situation where they're counterproductive and that there's nothing we can do to resolve that problem. And so while it's appropriate for us to share the nature of these problems and their pervasiveness and their growth, and to expose those who are exasperating them. It isn't, I'm not calling here for a solution. I'm just strictly saying, here's the problem. And the problem is catastrophic. You ought to be aware of this, because unless you have an insurance policy against it, you're in trouble. And there is only one insurance policy. And it's free, by the way, but there is only one insurance policy against this. It happens to be the same fellow that you've mentioned several times in your replies. Has offered an insurance policy against it. It's a life assurance policy, and he's not charging anything for it.
He's ordained that we should die a physical death, but not an eternal death. The best numerical accentuator of the magnitude of the problem that I know of is the U.S. Census Bureau statistic that shows that every day in the world, 150,000 people die. And every day in the world, 350,000 babies are born, thus increasing the world population by 200,000 hungry new mouths to feed and bodies to be kept well every day.
And the majority of them are not being born into and are not increasing in countries that have a surplus of food and a surplus of health care capacity, but in those places that have a huge deficiency of those things.
Humans being carbon-based animals, we need protein, which is made of carbon chains, and the actual amount of whole complete protein being developed is not increasing anywhere near the sufficient rate to provide for the human race.
No. In fact, it's an inefficient food source, protein, because of the I understand the problem, it's incapable of keeping up with the demand, and we understand that. The bottom line here is the world, no matter which angle you look, is headed to catastrophe, whether it's in famine, whether it's in the proliferation of untreatable diseases, whether it is in military aggression, whether it's in political malfeasance, economic malfeasance, religious rage. It doesn't matter what angle you look. The Earth this planet is very quickly spinning to its demise.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we won't. We know that we won't implement effective measures to even attempt to to do this, because we know what the word God's word says.
No, we won't. And it's not that we have been predestined not to to do this. It's just that Yahweh has said that left to our own devices, we don't.
I will say that he has predicted that. I mean, use the word to predict merely means to speak. Like diction means to speak in advance. The only problem is when Yahweh speaks something in advance, he does so from a time transcendent perspective of complete certainty.
Yes.
When we do it, we're kind of guessing.
I mean, we're using evidence and reason to project into the future based upon what we have witnessed in the past, and that's the best we can do is to predict. What he is actually doing, of course, is he has witnessed our future, and so he's reporting in our past what he has already seen. So in that case, it is a report of future history, and it's one of the reasons that he never errs in that he is not predicting in the sense of he is predicting in one sense. His diction has happened before the event. He's not analyzing the possibilities. He's actually witnessed the conclusion. You know, it's interesting. This is a little different subject, Glenn, but if I come across, I'm a little annoyed here in this program here right at the moment, and have been for the last few days, maybe even for the next few days. I'm engaged in a project where I'm analyzing what Yahweh revealed to Daniel. And I'm right now dealing with what he said about the Roman Empire. And God is really condemning of Rome. I mean, he uses the most vicious terms to describe Rome. And so I decided that if God's going to take the time to explain his disgust for Rome, that I should probably do something that that is seldom done. I'm going to chronicle Roman wars. And And so I have, I started with the very first war that Rome fought. I'm right now, right around 110 of the Common Era, 110 CE. And so I have chronicled every war that Rome has fought. And the viciousness is just extraordinary. Now, the reason I bring this up, because in the conversation of predestination, I was dealing now with there were three Judean revolts against Rome. The first, of course, occurred in 66 and caused Rome to destroy Yahweh's temple, in fact, haul away Jewish slaves and the loot confiscated from the temple to build the most decadent and revolting structure ever conceived by man, the Roman Colosseum. I spent most of the day chronicling that war, and it made me nauseous what the Romans did. Mm-hmm. And now I'm chronicling that the second of the three Roman wars against the province of Iuda, as they would call it. And I came across, at this point, Christian historians chronicling the malfeasance of Jews, which they had come to despise. And I'll share with you an insight regarding Augustine and the City of God. There is another story that is also troubling. The Obama administration's plan to keep military aid flowing to Egypt. Fortunately, I should say, so I don't know if this is an unfortunate or fortunate bit of news, but the Obama administration's plan to provide military aid to Egypt, deliver Apache attack helicopters in particular, is what he wants to deliver to Egypt, ran into opposition this week as a senator blocked the next batch of shipments of Apache attack helicopters. The White House has criticized that. Senator Patrick Leahy, a Democrat of Vermont, the head of the panel that appropriates foreign aid. Now, can you imagine? We call under foreign aid an Apache attack helicopter is a vehicle of foreign aid. Called the administration's intent to release $650 million worth of military aid unconscionable in light of the recent waves of death sentences handed down by courts in Egypt after hasty and ridiculous mass trials. It is appalling, and it's a abuse of the justice system, Leahy said, from the Senate floor. Now, it shows a dictatorship run amok. Now, it's true. You know, the Muslim Brotherhood is amongst the most despicable institutions in all of human history. It is the wellspring from which virtually every Sunni terrorist group has emerged. Al-Qaeda, for example, was originally founded by a professor that attended a Muslim Brotherhood university. This cleric is the father of Al-Qaeda. Virtually every Islamic terrorist organization of the Sunni persuasion, which would be about 80% of them worldwide, was born in the Muslim Brotherhood. It is a despicable organization.
Which was nurtured by the Nazis.
Yeah, I'm sure the Nazis had. But I would, you know, to give the Nazis credit for the Muslim Brotherhood when they had about a 1% influence, about, you know, realistically, The Muslim Brotherhood is born out of the Quran and Hadith. It's an organization that attempts to achieve Muhammad's dream of world conquest. The fact is that as we talk about this alliance with the Nazis, Adolf Hitler wrote Mein Kampf praising Islam. Adolf Hitler recognized that the Islamic religion was the single most effective tool that could be wielded for world conquest. Adolf Hitler allied with the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, not only to promote the Holocaust, but also to produce SS units filled with Muslims, because the Islamic religion and the mindset of the SS, and the SS was a religious order, were so similar.
Is
there an affinity between the Muslim Brotherhood? Was there an affinity? And Nazism? Absolutely. In Prophet of Doom, I devoted 77 pages of Prophet of Doom to juxtaposing Muhammad's recitals next to his Hitler's recitals and Mein Kampf. And they're essentially indistinguishable apart from race and place. Now, the issue we have here is that in Egypt, all we have is evil. The Muslim Brotherhood is pure evil. The dictatorship, the army dictatorship is pure evil. They are extraordinarily repressive. They have gone so far as not only to outlaw the political party, it represented 70% of the population. They have labeled them as terrorists, hunted them down, stolen their homes, stolen their finances, stolen all of their internal documents, incarcerated them, declared them subject to capital punishment, and is now proposing elections where only an approved candidate, one they approve, can run, which is why a communist is running against the general and no one else. And so what you have here is not just that the military junta is reprehensible. It's that the people that they replaced were even more evil. And all the while, the United States continues to give weapons of war to these people. I mean, Leahy is half right. The current government of the military junta is despicable by any rational standard. But the government that they replaced that was popularly elected, winning 70% of the vote, was even worse. There are times, and most of what we experience around the world falls into this category, when the choices are between two evils, and when those exist as the choices, you ought not participate. We ought to just simply walk away. We can't fix this problem. We'll be back after the news break.